And of course, we're talking with Dr. Ann Seaford, the epidemiologist, and on a subject that I never thought I would be talking about in my career at all, something that affects all of us, every one of us, this COVID-19 situation, which just seems to eat away at all of us as well. But when we come back, I've got more to talk with Ann about, to get her views on some things. And then we'll take your calls this final hour with her on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Ann Seaford with us. And if we had five epidemiologists in the room and we were all talking to everybody, would we have five similar discussions or would they all be different? What do you think?
I think they'd be similar. I'm not saying, 100% convergence, but I think right. They would be quite similar. And something I wanted to mention, because I know your audience is interested in the planet and other planets and how we all relate. And it's a little bit of a factoid, and that is that what we have on our planet, the most successful living organisms are bacteria. There are many, many of them, and they've lived on this planet for a very long time, and they're still here.
And they're alive, right?
And they are alive. They are living organisms. But here's the interesting thing. The most numerous entity, let's say, just in sheer numbers, and we're not saying they're alive, are viruses.
Uh-huh.
And according to some people, the viruses are the biggest single threat to man's continued dominance on this planet. And so where did they come from? You tell me.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let me ask you this. There may come a point where we may have to make a very unpopular decision and do something about the economy that is sinking and sinking and sinking. So let me ask you this. As an epidemiologist, in your opinion, I'm not saying I recommend this, but I want to ask you what would happen if we decided as a government to open up everything. If some people want to wear masks, that's up to them. Let them do it, but they won't be compelled to do it. But we open up everything like it was before. In your opinion, would this be any worse than it is now? What would happen?
It would probably be worse, and I'm basing this on the history of Sweden. What happened to Sweden? Sweden, when the virus first came about, and they had a few cases, they basically took the approach of let's not close everything, let's keep things open because we want to keep our social systems going and we want to keep people working. And actually for about the first few months they seemed to be doing well, and part of that was because the people themselves understood how the disease was spread and actually were monitoring in a way, keeping some distance, staying at home, being careful, that sort of thing. And then a new wave came, and all of a sudden, Sweden is now of the countries in that European constellation, it has the most deaths, it's had the most new cases, it's in a bad situation right now. So basing this on what happened to Sweden and basing this on what's happened in our own country, in Texas especially, and Florida and California, we had a big increase in cases and an increase in deaths, and we're still trying to recover from it. So, I mean, one could take the position that the hosts that get infected will die out. So we'll just let everybody who gets infected and can't handle it and doesn't have a proper immune system, they die out, and the healthy people are still around, and maybe they built up some antibodies, and maybe they're asymptomatic, and the virus disappears for a while. But what we don't know about this virus, and I suspect it may be true, that it will be dormant. It's one of the things that viruses do. They do one or two things. They either infect you and they replicate and they go out to infect other people, or they just find a home in your living cells and they stay there for a while until your immune system, for some reason, is challenged or weakens. And then they come out again, and they're always looking for new susceptibles. So to answer your question, I would say it's not a good idea to go completely open. However, keep in mind that what's good for the society is good for us, and it's good for the economy. So, you know, I remember listening to a sheriff from Texas, and he said, what's good, you know, having a great economy if you don't have any people? So we want to keep our people alive.
Sure.
We want to keep our people healthy, and we want to keep the economy going as well. So what we're looking for is a balance. And I feel that people are suffering right now. They're not only economically because of businesses closing. We need to use some common sense. You know, what's the highest risk? What's our risk? Our risk is close contact. Our risk is prolonged interaction and enclosed environments. And so can't we find some ways to allow businesses to survive, keeping in mind that we try to keep some distance, you know, that takes care of the close contact, that we make our interactions brief, and that we rectify enclosed environments. Now, this is happening somewhat with restaurants. However, it could also happen with filtration systems, which a lot of restaurants don't have. They'll have, air circulating, keep repeating to circulate within the restaurants. So it would require a different type of filtration system. So I hope that businesses can get back to functioning. But we also need people to cooperate. We need people to not bring the virus to the restaurant. We need them to wear their masks, do the social distancing, or wash their hands. And when they go to a restaurant, hopefully they will not be contagious because they've prevented the virus from infecting them.
Well, this is what's so confusing for a lot of people, Ann. In St. Louis, where I am right now, you're allowed to go into a restaurant with a mask on, but as soon as you sit down, you can take the mask off. Now, what's that going to do? Now, obviously, you can't eat with a mask on, but my point is, if you walk in with a mask on, but then you can take it off when you're sitting, and you've got all these tables 6 feet away, but they're still all there with everybody sitting there without masks. Is that going to do anything?
Well, if they keep the 6-foot rule, in theory, it's fine. As long as the circulating air in that restaurant is being replaced, if there's fresh air coming in. We're talking about reducing risk, and this is something that I think the CDC could do to help us all out. And that is to give a table of risk. Actually, it is on their website, but you have to fish around on the website to find it. But, you know, there's something called a harm reduction approach. And I think that's what people need to know. I feel battered. I think a lot of people feel battered because you go to the supermarket, and you go there, and one time you go there, you're allowed to bring your own bags. The next time you go there, oh no, you can't have your own bags anymore. We give you plastic bags. And now I'm finding I can't get change. I went to the supermarket.
No, they don't want cash.
Right. And this is all, you know, everything. And you're standing there and you're wondering what is going on here. And I'm thinking to myself, now what's the risk here? You know, what am I going to do? Touch a penny that has COVID-19 on it? You know, that it seems to me rather low risk.
Well, I'm telling you, it's gotten out of control, this whole thing.
And this is where I think we need to get good advice from the CDC. It has to be consistent. It has to be broad-based.
I don't think they know, Ann. I don't think anybody at the CDC really knows about this. I don't think they know how it came about. I contend it was made in a laboratory or delivered to a laboratory. I hear all kinds of stories doing this show. But bottom line is, we were getting reports from the CDC that changed every other day. There was a different story every other day.
Well, because it's a moving target. I mean, what it boils down to is lack of knowledge. We, you know, initially, this is a new virus.
Yes.
So no one really knew what is this virus going to do. And I think, I don't know what the politics were. I don't know what, you know, was going on behind the scenes. I trust that the virologists, the biologists, the epidemiologists, they probably were all going to be very cautious and give the advice probably close to what I was saying, that, you know, the mask should have been used immediately and so on. But probably my guess is that they were told, you know, don't make this a crisis and don't make this into something where people will panic, we're worried. And maybe they had to basically step back a little bit and not be so aggressive. When you look at China, it's under control, but look what they did. I mean, we're talking about a country that dominates its citizens.
Anyway,
and
yeah.
Exactly. So, and can we do that in the United States? I don't think so.
I mean, hockey playoffs are going to start soon. And they're going to play without anybody in the stands. So it's going to be almost like a virtual stands of fans. And you're going to have hockey players playing on ice with nobody there. I mean, how long? Here's my question. How long do you think this virus realistically could last the way it's happening right now without diminishing? Could it go on for years?
No. It will ebb and flow. I mean, if we...
On its own?
Here's what a virus needs to do. It needs to find, basically, pardon my expression, new meat. I mean,
I get that.
It needs new living cells to
replicate.
After a while, the amount of available hosts starts to diminish. And if they don't have, you know, new hosts to infect, you will see a gradual decline. But then what happens is you get either the immunity wears off without a vaccine. I mean, this is the great hope, is that we find a vaccine that can mitigate all of this. The host population becomes more available, there are more susceptibles. There are more people now that don't have antibodies. And some people are talking about second infections. You know, they thought they had it once and they're home free. Not so with some people. And there's great variety of variability among people in terms of immune systems. So, I mean, our best defense is really to have a healthy immune system, but not everybody has that.
And let me ask you about the flu for a second. The common flu kills upwards of 60,000 people a year based on CDC statistics. At no point did I ever in my career as a broadcaster hear any mainstream media reporting on the deaths of the mainstream flu on a regular basis like they've done with COVID. I mean, in the beginning when we had 10 people would die or we had the people die in the nursing home in Seattle, they reported on all these deaths. Meanwhile, we have 20,000 to 60,000 people that died in 2019-20 from the flu. And nobody ever reported on that. So my question is, isn't it confusing that maybe in some of these 130,000+ deaths in the United States, all tragic, that some of those could be flu deaths or heart attacks or cancer victims that they tossed in?
Well, it could be, but I'm assuming that they were tested, you know, that they did find the antibodies for the COVID-19. I mean, the deaths from COVID-19 are verified cases.
Well, but, you know, having been tested doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to kill you, because the mortality rate is what? A couple percent?
About, well, it varies, you know, because the statistics that are involved when you look at the mortality rate depends on the number of cases that have been identified and then the number of deaths. But for a general ballpark, I would say we're at about 3.5% death rate, which is significantly more than a flu death rate, which is maybe 0.1 to 0.2%. And in some cases, like in Italy, the death rate from COVID-19 is about 10%. So it just depends on, the period of time, the country. But this is a pandemic. We've had flus that have been pandemic, but without the easy spread that we're seeing here and without quite the number of deaths. And the big problem, and I think the reason it's getting so much attention, is that no one knows how to fix it.
No, nobody does. They're confused.
No. And whereas with the flu, there are plenty of fixes. People generally, they identify it, it's a flu, they may have had their flu shots, they can sort of work it out at home. But this is a situation where the virus itself is attacking lung cells. People can't breathe. It's a very severe respiratory effect of having this virus go in there. So it's a different animal. It's not an animal, a different entity, I should say. And we're looking for a vaccine to be the part of the solution. But if the vaccine doesn't come about, if it doesn't work, then basically what happens is the virus will extinguish when the host supply extinguishes, or the host gets smart. And this is what I'm saying. If everybody followed the CDC guidelines, if everybody wore a mask, I think we could get through this in a matter of months. That's my opinion.
Interesting. I take a lot of supplements. I take vitamin D, vitamin C.
Well, all of that
zinc.
Is good. So, I mean, that's what you need to do. I want to mention something though about the social part of this, because
we're gonna hit a break pretty soon. But go ahead until the breaks.
Hit the music. About the masks. One of the disturbing issues for me with masks, I can't see people's faces.
No, but you can see the eyes. The eyes will tell you.
Yes, but it's disturbing not to see a person's face.
Yes.
The reason it is because about 55% of our communication is nonverbal.
That's right.
A lot of it comes from the face, and a lot of it comes from a smile. I'll give you just a short example, and if we go to break, I'll just be real quiet quickly. But I was walking down the street. I had my bandana on.
Let's hold it because the break's starting now, and I want to get to this story. So we'll pick up you walking down the street in just a second. Plus, we'll take promised phone calls, and when we come right back, they're all lining up to talk to you. Next hour, we'll be talking about the superhuman telekinesis, the ability to move objects with your mind. It's going to be amazing. And when we come back, we'll take phone calls with Dr. Ann Seifert as we talk about COVID-19. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our final segment with Dr. Ann Seifert, and we'll get to your calls right after her story here. Ann, you're walking down the street with a bandana on. What happens to you?
Well, a nice man was walking down pretty close to me, maybe 3 or 4 feet away, which is fine. We both had masks on. And he looked at me. He said, I bet you're really pretty under that mask. And I looked at him and I smiled. And then as I walked away, I realized that he was missing something and I was missing something. What he was missing, he wanted to see what I look like. And what I was missing is my acknowledgement to him that he didn't see my smile.
Yep.
So how did
exactly.
He know that I thought that I was happy? He just saw eyes that looked at him. And I realized, he had no idea that I thought that was funny. And I started to come up with the, you know, I didn't realize that so many other people have really missed seeing a person's face. And then I found out that actually at, I believe it was Johns Hopkins, some graduates from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health came out with what they call clear masks. And part of that was in response to people who are hard of hearing.
Right.
Can't lip read. They can't see the lips. And I started to think this is maybe a direction that we could go that would relieve a little bit of the grief, a little bit of the anger, a little bit of the feeling of a lack of connection. If you can't see a person's face, it's disheartening in many ways. So I think that I found that on the market at Amazon and all different places, you can get these see-through masks. And I'm not talking about the ones that are hooded, you know, that go like on the top of your head and come straight down. They have some that are just a brief little plastic mask that you put on. Some of them are disposable. You wear them once, you throw them away, and others you can just wash. So and they're breathable.
Yeah, almost like Saran wrap, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't tried one myself, but I'm tempted to. But I just wanted to mention that was something that might help. It just might help. As long as we have to do this, as long as we're trying to prevent infecting other people, and I'm saying this in a general way because we don't know. I mean, I don't know. For all I know, I'm asymptomatic. You know, you're healthy, I'm healthy. We don't know whether we're carrying something. I doubt that we are, but I'm not going to renege my social responsibility.
Right.
I just feel it is a social responsibility. And so even if you feel you're healthy and you're doing everything right, somebody else may need you to have that mask on.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Let's take some calls here for you now. Mike in Clearwater, Florida. Get us started, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Always glad to talk to you. I have a quick comment and then one question for you and two for the doctor, and then I'll get off and take the answer.
Okay.
For those of you who don't have Coast to Coast Insider, you should get it. There was a show that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when I listened to it 25 years ago when Art Bell was talking to this doctor about Ebola. Now, thank God we're not dealing with Ebola, but he pretty much foreshadowed what we're going through right now. Now, the question for you, George, because of the nature of what you do, I know you travel a lot. I know, is it in the back of your mind that I could get COVID? Like, does it make you nervous sometimes? And then the questions for the doctor is, I like to go eat, and usually I do it at least once a week, sometimes maybe more. I don't want to see my favorite restaurant go out of business, but with these so-called numbers, and I don't believe for a minute the numbers that are giving us, but we'll go with them because that's what they say. Should I tamp that down and maybe not go out to eat until these numbers come down? And then the second thing, Doctor, I live in Florida, and we have mosquitoes and all kinds of creepy, crawly things. Can insects transmit COVID? If one bites somebody that has it and then comes to me and says, oh, he looks like a good meal, let me bite him. Could I get it that way? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay. I'll let you answer these two questions first, Dan. Then I'll answer his question about my travel schedule. She probably should keep going to restaurants with a mask, right?
Yeah. There is a mask that I actually think would be good for wearing to a restaurant, and that's motorcyclists. I think they call them neck gaiters. They just kind of around your neck. What's nice about them is you can just put them up and put them down.
And flip
you don't
them
have
down.
To worry about putting them around your ears or anything like that. And they're comfortable and very breathable. And I would hope that the restaurant has taken all the precautions. I know in my area, they're very good. The waiters are wearing, they're actually doubling up. I think it's a little overkill, but I won't complain about that. They're wearing masks and the face shields. So the people who are waiting on you are very protected. The concern in the restaurant is, assuming they're spacing the tables, really is the air circulation. If if it's closed, if it feels warm in there, if you don't feel like the air is moving, then I would take it to go.
What about insects, though, being able to spread this thing?
No, no, you're not going to get a COVID-19. I don't know of any cases that came from an insect. You might get West Nile virus, but you won't get COVID. COVID is person to person. Well, actually, it started out, let's say, with an animal, it went cross species, which is unusual. And it's usually when a virus goes from another animal to a human that these are the lethal bad viruses, because we don't have built up immunity to those. And so it's human to human. And that's why I feel very motivated. And actually, George, it's why I asked to be on your show, because I want people to understand that it is our responsibility to one another not to spread this virus.
Well, I'm glad.
That virus is looking for us, and I don't want us to hold hands with it. It's a parasite, and if people would think of it as a parasite, because that's what it is, I think they would be much more likely to go along with some of the guidelines.
And, Michael, as far as my travel, I am not concerned about getting COVID. I am wearing a mask on the plane now, which Southwest compels you to. And I do travel a lot. I hit a lot of airports and things like that. And then when I'm around people I know or I'm taping my TV shows, the mask comes off. But, no, I think I've been a believer in building up your immune system for years, and I think I've done a great job doing that, knock on woods, but that's what I do. Let's go to Brenda in Modesto, California. Hi, Brenda. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, George. I wanted to ask you a question, or ask you if maybe you could check out something. That my phone had gotten hacked quite a while back, and they did it through my college number or whatever. My ID.
Okay.
So, because I really didn't know that much about phones and all this, so I started like kind of researching it. And then they do like a journal. I think they do it through your calendar, but they make they have these journals. I don't know. Are they publishers or authors or, you know? Anyway, so I was tracking, like, because I have a journal cut up on my analytics, and I was tracking it. And it came to this publisher, Arthur.
Well, Brenda, what's your question, though?
Oh, anyway, he was sending all the journals that he'd been collecting for a long time to the health organization, World Health Organization. And I was just wondering, I don't know, I was just thinking that maybe, you know, maybe they're using the journals for, because they were talking about the medical thing and all
that.
Well,
it sounds like what's happening to you is you're getting robocalls. And, you know, did he give your number away? Maybe that's possible. But, you know, I think you're trapped in the robocall thing, as so many other people are. Don in San Antonio, Texas, welcome to the show. Go ahead, Don.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. Great talking to you again.
Hi there, Don.
Yes, sir. One quick question for you, sir. You asked me to send you an email when you and I spoke, and I sent it to you earlier yesterday. So I just want to let you know that it's already been sent to you.
Okay, and send one more just to be safe.
Oh, okay, yes, sir. I will do that. Thank you.
Okay,
Doctor, my big question and concern is, when I watch the mainstream media and I hear these doctors and medical experts, so-called, speak, they're not speaking any, we're not getting any information, the mass public's not getting any information on how to boost the immune system, as Mr. Norrie just spoke about, where he has no fear of getting this COVID or any other virus. And I'm the same way. I boost my immune system. I take loads and loads of supplements, minerals, vitamins, zinc, vitamin D3.
Eat properly and everything else.
Yes, sir. Selenium, vitamin K, just masses and masses of vitamin C. And so I'm 56 years old. I feel like I'm in my mid-30s. I exercise.
Good for you.
I believe everyone is responsible for their own health. If you look at the deaths that are occurring, it's older people who have underlying health conditions who don't have healthy immune systems, who are not taking the proper supplements. So what my thing is, I don't understand why we're not giving this proper information to people to boost your immune system, because the zinc, which I take, and I'm sure Mr. Norrie is aware of this as well, the zinc actually creates a barrier around the cells, which keeps these viruses from penetrating the cells to actually start to mutate and all of this. But I'm just trying to understand why, because, you know, why we're not getting this proper information, because to me, the key is the immune system.
He's got a point here, Ann. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's got a good point. I think, the tougher your immune system, the better. And you hopefully will not come down with the virus. But here's a problem for you. And that is, there are two things I think I mentioned that the virus will do. One is it will infect you and it will replicate, and then you get sick. Now, if you have a good immune system, you won't get sick, probably, okay?
Right, as a lot of people aren't. I mean, most people aren't getting sick.
That's right. But what happens is maybe, and I'm saying this because of the lack of knowledge that we have. But the other thing the virus does, and I'm just saying that for some reason, even you came in contact with somebody, let's say, that had the virus.
Right.
You're healthy. Okay, so that virus is, says, oh, this guy's healthy, I'm just going to sit here. And that virus goes into one of your living cells and hangs out there. Now, that virus is going to wait around until maybe you get stressed one day, maybe your immune system goes down one day, and it can pop. The other thing we don't know, and this is a little bit scary for all of us, is what the long-term effects are. Let's just say that you're exposed and nothing happens, and many of us are actually have some resident viruses in us that are not activated. If you ever had chickenpox, you're carrying that virus. It's still in you, and it won't come out. It won't come out until maybe you're much older, years and years from now. And guess what? You get shingles because you got stressed, or your immune system had all of a sudden a decline, and you get shingles. So with this particular virus, because it's unknown, we just don't know, what will happen. That virus could, you're asymptomatic, you're healthy, you're fine, just sitting there 25 years from now, something, get inflammation of the lung, and where did that come from?
Well, that'll put me in my 90s, so that's fine.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm saying that there's an unknown here. But you're right. The healthier you can be, the more you pumped up your immune system is, the much better all the way around. And to answer the other part of your question is why aren't the doctors, why aren't the health experts promoting that? It's because it's really not their field. They're into disease. They're not into the lifestyle.
They're not into prevention.
Yeah, I mean, the prevention is the intervention.
Absolutely. And we're out of time, but we've got your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You're also a relationship counselor. We should get you back one day to talk about that. A lot of stress going on with the people who are in relationships because of all of this, too. That's a different show all by itself. Up next, we're going to be talking about the superhuman, the ability of telekinesis, and the ability to just do incredible things. So let's get ready for that. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to our free YouTube channel at Coast to Coast AM Official in the YouTube search bar.